Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another show where tonight we're going to be starting off with an extra time show where we're going to look back on our hard-fought 1-0 win at Norwich City, and I'll be joined for that by Terry and Owen Parks. Then I'll be joined by Max Carlisle to run the rule over Morgan Schneiderlin's departure from Everton last week, and then Terry will be joining me for the final segment to look ahead to our fixture back at Goodison against Leicester City on Wednesday in another match preview segment. As you know, the segments will be separate videos on YouTube, so I'll introduce them respectively as we move through the podcast. So without further ado, we'll crack on and introduce our viewers on YouTube. So get straight into it with that win at Norwich. Welcome to the Extra Time Show for Norwich City 0, Everton 1. Everton get their first win of the resumed Premier League campaign and make it 4 points out of six in the first two games. So it's not a bad start, is it? I mean, it wasn't the best performance, but we'll get on to that. We'll dissect the game bit by bit, and it's not always going to be pretty, I don't think, Terry. What do you make of the performance?
It was a game of two halves, really, wasn't it? It wasn't the best game overall anyway, but Everton was certainly, you know, much improved in the second half than they were in the first. In the first, you know, I think people, you know, feared, you know, the worst because just looked lethargic, looked sluggish, looked slow to everything. You know, players weren't having good games. Then in the second half, Ancelotti made like a, you know, a crucial change. Like, obviously, he took Tom Davis off, who I'm sure we'll touch on, but it was more the...
Hang on, whoa, hang on. Is Terry about to praise Gylfi Sigurdsson?
Maybe. Possibly now. It was more the change of sort of methodology, I suppose, where it frees up some of the players in different positions with the change of personnel. And then obviously we started to control the game a lot more in the second half. We still were in greater, you know, game management towards the end, but, you know, 3 points is 3 points, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I think that when this Premier League was resumed, the only thing I was bothered about really was let's do something so we're not in the bottom half, because I think it's a disgrace for us to be in the bottom half, given the ambitions of the club.
I was worried, genuinely worried, given our away form before the restart, you know, what we'd been like. Even with Ancelotti coming in, I didn't think, you know, I was worried that we might do a Schalke, where we would just come back and we're just terrible because we need our supporters. And I'm not saying, you know, oh, that's it, now we're brilliant and we won't lose any games, but the fact that we've got 4 points from the first two, regardless of how we've got them, is
sort of easy. Better than what Schalke have done, I think, so.
Yeah, it eased me worries a little bit that we're not going to be this disaster for the rest of this season without supporters. This game obviously wasn't our best. I think you could see the 2 days less preparation that we had was in a lot of the players. So if they were having bad games, it was exacerbated by that anyway. But now we've got a week basically to prepare for the next game. And there'll be other games where we're tired from the previous game and we haven't had much rest, but it's just how you manage that. And it's what big clubs do, and we need to get used to managing things like that. These repetitive games they're playing every 3 days.
Certainly. And of course, we'll touch on a few of the individual performances. Owen, what did you make of the sort of individual displays? Who sort of stood out for you?
In a positive light, Iwobi and Michael Keane. I thought Iwobi in particular was really, really good. He didn't have the best first half, but it was more to do with the whole, like what Terry said about him, the sort of methodology changed. And then the first half, he was sort of sticking to that role in a way he was in Derby, where he'd become like a wing back and just look to break on them. Whereas in the second half, I think Ancelotti's told him to tuck in a bit more, play a bit further up and cause Norwich some issues. Defensively, still with Iwobi pressing up, we were fine. It was more to do with the fact that we needed to get someone up the pitch to get the puck on the ball. In a negative sense, them two in midfield are horrific. I don't know how many times I've got to say it, but the pair of them, they don't know what they're doing in there. They lose the ball. They make stupid decisions. There's always a run on with the front two, and they make a short pass. I'm sick and tired of the pair of them, to be honest.
I know. I understand that you're not a fan of either of those individuals. I know who you're referring to is Tom Davis and Andre Gomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know.
Terrific.
And I know there's a there's a lot of defensive Andre Gomez. I know he has come back from a long injury, but he was pretty poor. I thought he did improve in the second half. But after... Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
There wasn't much to improve on, to be fair. You know, he didn't have to do much to improve in the second half. He was that bad in the first half. If he got took off instead of Davis, no one could have complained because they were both equally as terrible.
Yeah, they were both atrocious. But let's talk about Tom Davis, because he played very well in the derby and then comes into this. And like you say, there wasn't a lot of rest and recovery time, but my God, he looked like a liability, didn't he, in that first half?
He was woeful.
The air kick from the keeper's punch is the highlight of it for me.
Yeah, it wasn't just the sort of that he couldn't get into the game kind of bad performance. He was just making terrible decisions on the ball. Instead, I don't know how many times he just did something stupid in his own half.
Lost the ball on the halfway line a good few times, didn't he? And every time that Onel Hernandez was breaking away with it and causing us problems down our right.
It was as bad as his performance away at Chelsea a couple of months ago. Two really horrific performances. If he plays a simple game, he's probably fine in there. It's just he tries to overcomplicate everything. Things that are just much beyond what he's good at. He's not a very good player, so stick to what you're good at.
And dare to say, when Gylfi Sigurdsson comes on, we looked a lot more composed on the ball, and Teddy's not going to like this, I don't think. I thought Sigurdsson was pretty good yesterday.
It suits him, it's the experience. Just keep it slow. You know, nothing cheap in that.
Well, he's not exactly fast, so we haven't got much of a choice there, have we?
He's not much better, but neither is Bernard, by the way, on the left. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it wasn't a great showing from Bernard either. He didn't really get into the game, did he? I think when you talk about him not getting into the game performance, that was definitely something Bernard was guilty of.
It's tough coming back 2 games in 3 days, especially when the weather turns like this. Just getting 4 points, I'll take it. But that midfield needs some serious questions.
Yeah, there's a lot to be done with the midfield, that's for sure. I thought, on a more positive note, though, I thought the defence was pretty solid. Like, they did trouble us a few times in the first half, and we didn't wilt. I thought the centre-backs in particular were good. Michael Keane, of course, got a goal, and Mason Holgate as well looks really comfortable on the ball and continues to grow as a player.
Mason Holgate, amazing now, isn't he? He's such a different player to what we saw before this season. I was worried that when he came back, maybe, you know, it might seem that it was maybe a bit of a purple patch or so. You know, to be honest, that's the pessimism of every Evertonian. I think that we're going to come back and Calvert-Lewin can't score anymore, or Holgate suddenly can't defend. But he's been great since he came back. I mean, the whole back four has, but Holgate, I know he didn't, I think he was only edged out for man of the match because Keane got the goal, because they were all great. Holgate these past 2 games has been fantastic.
Absolutely, and I think you spoke about Calvert-Lewin there as well. I thought he'd done really well yesterday. I thought, considering the four midfielders and Richarlison, and I thought were all a bit off colour, I thought Calvert-Lewin did really well when he was pretty much carrying everything up front. He was holding the ball up well, and I mean, not much of it came of anything because of the other players underperforming, but I thought he led the line well.
He worked very hard, but he always works hard. It's tough when there's not many players getting in and around him, because that's when he's at his best, when he can flick stuff on or find some space for himself. It wasn't that available yesterday, but I thought he did very well in terms of leading the line. And
yeah, he certainly did. And Richarlison as well, I thought he was a little bit off the pace yesterday. I didn't see much of him. He came off for Moise Keane, and about Moise Keane, how many people had the heart in the mouths when he tried to take on that Norwich player in our own box?
Oh, mate, he was in the corner of his own box with 3 Norwich players ahead of him, and instead of just shooing it up the line, he tried to take them on and loses it. And it wasn't great. He wasn't great. That was the standout moment, but he was. He wasn't great either. I'm a big defender of Moise Keane, and I still think it's very early days. I think, you know, Calvert-Lewin there is a perfect example. You can't just write off a player because he doesn't look right at first. But then on the other hand, you can't just write off every bad thing he does because that doesn't help either. But he was terrible. He
booked 20 seconds into his cameo appearance because he snapped someone.
Yeah, he tried to do a back heel and never come off. And then he's, you know, trying to get the ball back. It's booked with it, like, within seconds. And I don't know. He looked knackered the second he came up.
I think we've seen this with him before, when he got hooked against Man United. And obviously that was quite controversial, but he was blown out of his arse when he did that, when he got hooked, when he came on and then got hooked by Duncan Ferguson. He was looking quite unfit then, and I know everybody's a bit unfit, but is there a bit of a deeper fitness problem with Moyes Keane? Owen?
I don't know. Like, I think it may be, obviously he hasn't looked fit in the past, as you say, but fitness-wise, I'm not going to judge any player with these restarted games because it's like playing a Premier League game as soon as, you know, you come back off holiday in the summer. Like, there's no pre-season. So, all right, well, you say, well, Moyes Keane looks tight, looks knackered whenever, he, you know, even when he is in the middle of a season. But you just don't know what the different, you know, fitness levels are of players. I'm not going to slate him for looking unfit. I'm going to slate him for the stupid decisions he made.
It was very much a decision-making issue on a number of occasions. In that, he was only on for about 20 minutes, wasn't he? But he certainly made a couple of bad decisions. I think the one on the edge of his own box stands out. But I remember one where he could have made a run for Calvert-Lewin through the middle and he ran wide and Calvert-Lewin had to shoot in the end and it kind of petered out. And I think that's the thing we need to get. I think Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison on a good day are always seem to be on the same page, and Moyes Keane needs to start doing that if he wants to break into the first team on a more regular basis.
Moyes Keane needs to, I know it, as I say, it is early days, but he needs to be grasping these opportunities. Like, all right, he's coming on for 20 minutes. Is that a big opportunity? But you know, when Richarlison's not having a good game and he comes off, that's how you're going to get in the team. If you can perform when the other players are having rare off days, if, you know, Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison are our two most consistent best players, if you come on for one of them with a, you know, not like the other day where it was, you know, 30 seconds and you're off. But if you come on and get like a crack, you don't have to score, but you need to be doing better than he did, because you're never going to get in the team if you come on and you're no better than a player who's off form himself.
That's a really good point, actually, what you've just made there, because that's what he's got to do to knock one of those players out. You've got to actually be showing an improvement, which a substitution's supposed to bring that anyway. When you take somebody off, you're hoping somebody else can come on and make an improvement to the way things are going. And if he isn't doing that, then he's never going to he's never going to stake a claim for a first team place, is he?
No, and another thing I really had an issue was the same with Tom Davis. Like what Terry said, we can have a go at players for not being fit, but it's longer than a normal season break from May to August, plus not having a pre-season, so I can't really judge that. But it was the decision making. It was that 20 minutes felt like 2 hours watching him play. It was so tough because, again, just do the simple things well. If you're not up to speed, just get the ball out of your feet. Just do the simple things well.
That's become quite a cliche, I think, with commentators, hasn't it, since this season's resumed and during this period where everyone looks a bit off the pace fitness-wise. They've all been saying that don't take too many risks, and clearly Moyes Keane didn't get the memo.
No, he didn't. I really don't know what to think of him anymore, because I look at him and I just don't think he's up to the speed of the team or anything. He's had Carlo since December now and he still doesn't look up to speed. Plus the stuff that was happening in lockdown, which I don't think you can really judge, just doesn't seem to. His detractors will look at that and say, I told you so. It's tough
for him. There's a lot of sticks to beat him with, isn't there?
Yeah, it's tough for him.
But yes, they're being tailor-made for him, really, because Norwich against Southampton, they did exactly what they did against us. They had like a decent half hour in a spell in the game, and then started to really blow up their asses in the late in the second half. And that's, you know, other than the odd chance when they brought their better players on, which God knows why they were resting them, by the way, for, you know, the FA Cup. But when they brought their better players on, you know, they got, you know, started to get a couple more chances, but the team as a whole were absolutely knackered towards the end of the game, Norwich. And that's where Moyes Keane should have been, you know, he should have been
jumping
like
rubbing his hands
together, yeah. Going, I'm going to come on and I'm fast and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to, like, if he makes that run for Calvert-Lewin, he might get a goal, you know what I mean? It's just, he just was badly off it, but a lot of players were badly off it, and it's not just him, you know what I mean? I'm not saying it's okay for him, but I'm glad we won, because it'd be a different show if we'd have not won yesterday when it was on a plate for us. 3 points,
oh, 3 points. You'd have never heard the end of it, would you? And I mean,
do you know what I think's done well since the restart, by the way, just bringing up Jordan Pickford? I think he's looked a lot more calm and composed than he did beforehand.
Yeah, that's been really good to see, actually. There hasn't been as much of the pulling stupid faces and stuff after he makes a save, which is, you know, that's the kind of maturity you want to see. You want to see him becoming more mature. And as a goalkeeper, you do need to lead by example sometimes, and it helps organise your defence. And maybe that's testament to, like, his performances, why we've kept two clean sheets on the bounce.
Yeah, you know, he's done, especially when you look at Dean Henderson's and Nick Pope's performances over the last couple of days. He's really done much better than them. It's like turning it around a bit, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of clamour for him to be axed from England's number one, but, you know, we'll just see how he gets on. I think it's a good start to the resumption of the Premier League for Pickford and for most of Everton, to be honest. I think most of the players have equipped themselves pretty well, given the circumstances. Just one more thing before we finish, though. I think the one thing that concerned me, and it's strange because we haven't seen too much of it under Ancelotti, apart from maybe that, the less we say about that, the better, that Newcastle game, was the game management at the end. I thought some of the decisions were a bit bizarre. I remember Lucas Digne picking the ball up on the left, and I think Calvert-Lewin was making a run towards the corner flag, and he pings it into Moyes Keane, and we lose the ball. And I'm just thinking, this was like with a minute and a half of added time left. I'm just thinking, just get in the corner and get the win. You know, it was those kinds of decisions. I remember it was Lucas Digne who was messing around by our own corner flag, which led to the corner, which led to Newcastle's first goal, which led to Newcastle's second goal. And I'm just thinking, you know, just be a bit more professional about it. Just see the game out and get the job done. I'm sure Carlo Ancelotti will be telling players that with the nous that he has and the experience that he's had over the years. But I don't know, that maybe I'm being a bit harsh, but I just think it's a bit of a pet peeve for me when you're only a goal to the good and the other team is trying to put pressure on you and there's a minute to go and you've got a chance to put it in the corner flag, see the game out comfortably, and then instead you give the ball away and, you know, make fans like me bite my nails for another minute. So, you know, it's a bit harsh maybe, but it's just something that peeved me a little bit, especially from the days of Martinez.
I understand what you're saying, because that did annoy me. It goes back to what I was on about before with Moyes Keane, and before that Davis and Luke Dean.
It's game management, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just decision making. It's any normal average Sunday league footballer would have just hoofed it to the corner and kept it there. But I don't know why we think we're better than that at times. But I think it's important to be positive, though, because there is 4 points in two games after not playing for 3 months, and especially people don't really talk about it, but when the weather turns like this, it can be difficult, but it shouldn't take away from basic decision making.
That's it's a good way of summing it up, to be honest, because I think you can't really point the finger at fitness, but, you know, sometimes it's the brain and you've just got to see who's got the intelligence to make the right decisions. And I think we're starting to become more aware of who's got a better football brain in this side than some others, maybe.
Hopefully it comes with time. Like, it has improved a little bit since the silver days when it was awful. We regularly lose games in the last minute, and it's very early days. You can't suddenly turn around after, what, 12, 13 games and say, oh, Carlo Ancelotti's fixed that. But it is marginally better. You know, like the game management is one of the bigger reasons why we can't win away from home. But this was an away win, albeit under, you know, strange circumstances. But that is his biggest challenge, I think, is not even getting... He's got good players. I don't think it's as big a job to improve the quality of Everton as it is to improve the game management. And
it's the mental side of things with Everton. And I think, like I was saying, that issue with game management goes back to Roberto Martinez, maybe even to David Moyes, because he was a bit too negative, I think, maybe trying to see games off. But Martinez, I remember the amount of times we were a goal up and we threw it away, had to settle for a draw. I mean, the Chelsea game, the 3-3, the Bournemouth 3-3, I'm pretty traumatised by his final season and the amount of wins we threw away by not managing the game properly. It was infuriating, and I don't think I'll ever get over the sort of PTSD that I've got off Martinez's final season. So, every time I see a player run towards the corner flag in the last minute, and I'm saying, get it in the blooming corner flag, because, you know, I just can't handle another Chelsea or another Bournemouth, or dare I say another Newcastle from this season. You know, just be professional about it and get the job done and stop making those fans like panic. There's just no need
for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll leave it at that. We'll finish on a more positive note, shall we? I mean, like Owen said, it's 4 points out of six. I don't think I was coming back into this resumed season with a lot of trepidation. I think, Teddy, I think you guys were both on the show when I was saying I was worried about the players' motivation and how we perform without fans, and I was concerned about our prospects. And to get 4 out of 6 is a good start. It's, especially considering we played the top team, got a point, and then obviously it wasn't the best performance against the bottom team, but we get the win. And that's not bad at all. We can definitely kick on from here. We've got a bigger break than Leicester City have before we play them, so hopefully that might give us a bit of a boost going into that. But it's not going to be an easy game anyway, Leicester, but we're going to have to step it up from what we saw yesterday. But I think we're going to be all right for the rest of the season. I don't think we're not going to win every game, obviously, but it's going to be better than I thought anyway. It's, at least I'm calming down a little bit after seeing us finally get a win. I think that's the...
You look like we can keep a clean sheet. So
yeah, that's a massive thing. And I think Carlo Ancelotti will have been working very hard on that, wouldn't he? During the mini pre-season, whatever it was, when they were trying to resume this. I think our defence has been so much better since we came back, considering the last game we played before, it was a 4-0 defeat. So I think it's a step in the right direction, and hopefully we can keep kicking on. We've got Leicester next, and we will need to see an improvement, but let's just enjoy the win, shall we? I mean, we've waited 4 months for one, so yeah, let's enjoy that. I'm joined by Max right now, and we're going to discuss the news that broke yesterday, of course, that Morgan Schneiderlin has left Everton Football Club. He's gone to OGC Nice. I think it's around a €2 million apparent transfer fee. But of course, on top of that, you've got a lot of wages going off the wage bill. There's a lot to debate, and we've got to try and see where this leaves us now in terms of midfield. What do we do next? And basically what we thought of Morgan Schneiderlin in his 3.5 years at Everton. So we'll get straight into it, Max. What was your opinion on Schneiderlin's 3.5 year stint at Goodison?
Firstly, yes, I know the transfer was labelled as undisclosed, but I don't think it's as lowly as £2 million. I've heard around 7, but at the same time, you don't know what percentages of that is add-ons and certain clauses within his contract. You hit the nail on the head there. It's certainly, I think, the main thing to derive from this transfer is the fact that we are getting a good piece of the wage bill sort of lifted. That makes sense.
120k, I think.
Yeah, upwards of 100k a week. And to answer your question and what I thought of Morgan Schneiderlin, I think the man that pulls the strings got me on here on purpose to sort of defend Morgan Schneiderlin, because I think anyone sort of followed me in my opinions over the last couple of years, I was a really big fan of Morgan Schneiderlin. And like we were saying just before we started recording, I think that there's an excellent argument there for Morgan Schneiderlin as an individual, that he's had a really successful career in England. I think he joined when he was an 18-year-old lad to Southampton, who were in League One at the time under Nigel Atkins, and he was part of a very talented crop of Southampton players that managed to get up into the Premier League. You know, you think of the players that he was alongside there, you know, Adam Lallana, Wanyama, Mane, Graziano Pelle, all of them have gone their separate ways, of course, which tends to be the case when you have I don't want to be disrespectful to Southampton in any way, but a lesser club that have a... I mean,
they're definitely a selling club. They've always seemed to try and profit off the best players.
Yeah, 100%. And when you seem to get that sort of mass group of talent, they all seem to go their separate ways. I know a hell of a lot of them seem to end up across Stanley Park at Liverpool, but Schneiderlin's obviously chose to go to Manchester United. I would make the case that I don't think Manchester United's been the best club for any player to go to for the last 5 years or so, really. But from Schneiderlin's perspective, you know, he can put forward that he won a treble. I remember Jose Mourinho tried to label it as a treble at the time.
Like the Charity Shield, the Europa and the FA Cup or something?
I think it was the League Cup, the Europa League and the FA Cup.
It was the League Cup, Europa and the Charity Shield.
Was it?
Yeah, he didn't even win the FA Cup.
Hardly. Didn't they win it against Crystal Palace?
That was under Van Gaal. Right after that.
Yeah, so you know, he has still accumulated quite a decent trophy haul at Manchester United. And I think at Manchester United, that's where a bit of the shine of his career got taken off, really, if that makes sense. I think when he was at Southampton, he was lauded really highly as the, you know, a really intelligent defensive midfielder that covers a lot of ground without you necessarily knowing it. I think positionally, he was excellent. He knew where to be, when to be to mop that ball up. Obviously played a bit under Ronald Koeman, which was the attraction of when he came to us in, I believe, 2017.
Yeah, January 17.
And for me, mate, when he was playing alongside Idrissa Gueye in that first season, I thought he was absolutely dynamite. I thought that...
I think they all did.
Yeah. The relationship that they developed on the pitch was really symbiotic, and was obviously influential in us getting, albeit Europa League qualifiers, but getting ourselves back into Europe. And I feel that's where things start going wrong from there. That's where things start going downhill, and people like you and your opinions start coming into this.
Yeah, well, I think that was probably the first evidence. I think he played in the Atalanta game where we lost 3-0, and that was like when I first started to lose faith in Ronald Koeman. But obviously, I think Schneiderlin, I think the tide turned on him when there was these rumours about Jordan Unsworth's caretaker spell where he got sent home from training. And obviously, between then, I think he got sent off against Lyon in Europe as well. I think there was a couple of... And I remember a stinker he put in against Burnley as well when we lost 1-0. Towards the end of Koeman's time. So there was a lot of bad performances in that sort of spell. I know we weren't at our best anyway, but he did seem to stand out for some reason as the worst performer, maybe because he took such a step down from the level that, like you say, you saw what we all saw in that first half a season. But it was very disappointing, and I think he was getting a lot of red cards, and which never ends easier to fans if you... Like, I mean, well, Duncan Ferguson got loads of red cards, but it was a bit different. He was getting silly red cards for, like, kicking out. Sometimes, I said this to Terry often, I felt like at times when the going got tough, he tried to get himself sent off on purpose because he didn't have the stomach for the fight. And I was convinced about that.
Especially
that Crystal Palace game at the opening game of this season.
Yeah, I see. Someone was pretty sharp with the stats when the deal was announced, saying Morgan Schneiderlin got more red cards than he got combined goals and assists at Everton. I think he got 3 red cards and 2 goals and assists put together. But for me, I think the standout performance was, I believe it was Mangala's debut when we played 3 at the back at Arsenal away. If I'm not wrong, am I thinking of that at the 6-1?
5-1
and yeah, he was just kind of absent in the midfield, really. I don't know whether that sort of systematically and tactically that was down to being in a three in the back, being managed by, of course, at the time, Big Sam. But yeah, for me, that sort of set the tone, which I think Evertonians are a unique group of football fans in that, regardless of your technical ability, the bare minimum is that you put 100% effort in all the time. Absolutely. When you're on the pitch. And
I stand by that.
I think most people have every right to do so. But at the same time, I think Schneiderlin's game is that of which depends on interpreting the game ahead of time, if that makes sense, as I say, being in the right place at the right time and, you know, putting in that vital interception, putting in that tackle and progressing the ball forward.
He never seemed to do any of that for Everton, though, in the final few years. It was always seemed to be a bit off the pace, like we saw the Cantwell goal for Norwich in the last Norwich game, and he didn't track his run. And obviously, when he does get the ball, a lot of the time it was backwards and sideways passes. It was exactly what you're saying was his forte, if you like, particularly in his Southampton days. We didn't see anywhere near enough of that in his time at Everton.
100%. I mean, I think we saw the odd resurgence under the likes of Marco Silva and whatnot, but nothing was really sustainable. And I know, I remember Kevin, that he went through some sort of bad personal sort of situations at the time. And, you know, I'm not discounting that by any means, but I do kind of endorse his transfer now, if that makes sense. As I say, I believe he can look back at his career in England and think, you know what, might not have ended on the sweetest note, but I've had success. I'm 30 years of age now, and I'm going back to my homeland, going back to France to play under Patrick Vieira. Of course, yeah. I think that's part of the pull. I mean, for God's sake, mate, Nice, you know, there's worse places in the world to play your football. You can't really argue with that. But from
they don't have a hot walk in Nice, though.
But at the same time, as you rightly said at the start of the video, that for Everton Football Club now, fingers crossed and touch wood, we're on the latter stage of our transitional phase, if that makes sense.
Starting to shift more and more of the dead wood, if you like, or not, maybe not even dead wood, but players who were taking up more of a wage than they warranted. Mm-hmm. People like Schneiderlin, for instance, obviously there is dead wood, like Martina and Nias, who are out of contract this summer as well. Martin Stecklenberg has announced, I think he's extended his contract to the end of the season, but he's going to Ajax, isn't he?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, given the global pandemic and whatnot, you are going to see some sort of unique contract situations, but that's a bit of a mad one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think, I'm not even sure, was he even we had two keepers on the bench in the derby, didn't we? That was interesting. No, I think that's the death knell for Umar Nias, if he can't get on the bench ahead of two keepers.
We'll see you, mate. We'll see you. And fingers crossed, the more businesses to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's business in both directions. I think it's going to be more of a sale summer than a incoming summer, that's for sure. Yeah, it's all about that balance sheet, isn't it? When I think, you know, we've got to try and toe the line with FFP, but it's also treading quite dangerously. Mm-hmm. To get some of those wages, and I think this is a really good start, and hopefully we see more of this between now and the start of the new season, whenever that may be.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
But just before we finish, Schneiderlin, what do you think his legacy is at Everton?
Red cards and not looking asked, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
It is a shame, as I say. A player that did have massive potential to be a cog in a well-oiled machine. Unfortunately,
the machine wasn't well-oiled.
Oh, it was broken. It was broken, and he was the part that was making it faulty at times. But, as I say, that's not to be disrespectful to Morgan Schneiderlin. I think he can look back on his career in England with some fondness.
I think he can do, yes, certainly. I think his time at Everton, though, has got to be one of those. Came in a lot of promise, big money, didn't really deliver. And that's sums it up, and too often it's summed Everton up over the time that he's been here as well. So maybe almost fitting, and maybe it's a symbolic moment that we move him on at a time where hopefully we're starting to get our act together.
Yep, fingers crossed.
A better season, we'll have some more astute signings in the not so distant future.
You'd like to think so. I also like to think that we'd have a new stadium in a couple of years, but you know.
It's not the morning I want to wake up to, in case you're wondering. Definitely don't go on Twitter this morning, guys. You don't want to see what's going down there. But anyway, that's the Morgan Schneiderlin debate of sorts. Let us know what you thought of Schneiderlin's spell at Everton. 3.5 years. What did he do right? What did he do wrong? We know there's plenty he did wrong, but let us know your opinions on Morgan Schneiderlin and what the transfer means for Everton moving forward, maybe with the transfers and the FFP. Now we're moving on to looking at the Leicester game in our match preview. Of course, I'm joined by Terry McAllister. We'll get straight into it. Terry, how do you feel going into the Leicester game? Obviously, we've just won our last game. Are you feeling confident for this?
I feel okay. It's hard, even after the two games we've had, it's very hard to like gauge with these restarted games, because you've seen like teams play really well and then the next game they don't play well. And with Leicester, they've got some really good players, and you know, under normal circumstances, you're like, they're going to give us some trouble, because they've got that one thing that we struggle with up top. Which is pace up top, sorry. The defence across the two games we've played so far has been really, really good. So I am more confident than I typically would have been, because although in across the two games, you know, the midfielders, the forwards had like, you know, varying levels of performance. You know, some games they were good, some games they were bad. The defence for both games has been really strong. So I am feeling quite good. I wouldn't sit here and go, yeah, we'll beat them, you know, because they're a very good team. But I'm feeling better than I probably would have under the, you know, the old rules, or normal circumstances, they were coming to Goodison, and you know, there'd been no, you know, month, you know, 3 month break or what have you. So yeah, pretty confident, but not overconfident.
Of course, Leicester have drawn both of their games since the resumption. I think they drew with Brighton 0-0 and 1-1 with Watford, which doesn't scream good form. But you know, who else do you want to play when you're trying to like turn around your bad form? So you know, It's
exactly
odds law, isn't it, with Everton? And I mean, it is worth noting though that we're recording this on Sunday, and as we speak, Leicester are about to go into a FA Cup quarter final against Chelsea, which is again not an easy game by any means. And obviously, this game is on Wednesday, which is a whole week after our Wednesday game against Norwich. We've had a week-long break, which is very rare in this resumption sort of period. So could that sort of work to our advantage, maybe having that extra rest?
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? Like, on paper, you know, that should be a massive advantage, because you could see against Norwich in our last game that the extra 2 days rest that Norwich had really, really had an impact. Now, Norwich, obviously, lacking quality, didn't really take advantage of that. But the Everton team, after, you know, putting in such a shift against Liverpool,
we did look off the pace, didn't we?
We looked really tired, didn't we? And you'd hope that Leicester would, you know, have a little bit of that themselves. Like, we obviously don't know what type of team they're going to put out against Chelsea, but with a full week of, you know, training after the games have started and after the season's restarted, you'd hope that this week would be quite important for our games going forward, because you know, the management team can get into the players. We get some players returning to fitness. So, you know, Carlo Ancelotti's mentioned Yerry Mina, he's mentioned Sidibe. Hasn't mentioned Delph, which, you know, no, Delph's not popular with everyone, certainly not myself, but considering how poor the centre midfield in general was against Norwich, you'd like as many options to be available there as possible, especially with so many games, you know, coming up back-to-back. But I think this could be a game where we possibly see Sidibe come in. I wouldn't be surprised if we brought Sidibe in on the right-hand side and put Iwobi left in his favourite position, because out of, you know, Gordon, Bernard and Iwobi. Iwobi's impressed the most since he came back into the team.
Definitely, yeah.
That Norwich second half, everyone else has sort of been middling to okay.
Yeah, I think Iwobi deserves a chance to play in that left wing role because it suits him to cut in, I think, and play the way Bernard maybe plays and sort of sneak into that number 10 position. And, you know, he might be able to cause Leicester a few problems if we do that right.
Well, you'd hope so, wouldn't you? Because if, you know, Carlo likes, you know, seemingly likes to play that 4-4-2, that sort of shifts to a 3-4-3. And that would work if you had someone more naturally, you know, comfortable on the wide right. Now, I know Sidibe's a right back, but he presses so high that he's obviously quite comfortable on right midfield with Coleman behind him. That allows Coleman to just stay in that sort of, like, you know, right centre back position. And then that suits Iwobi because Iwobi can cut inside and come in and, you know, do a bit of his better work with Lucas Dean on his outside. So, I mean, it all depends on fitness. We could get, you know, to the next Leicester game and, you know, Wobie's, you know, not as fit as Bernard or what have you, or Gordon. He wants to give Gordon a better chance, but it's nice to have some better options. And, you know, you just hope that, you know, Leicester aren't as, you know, fit and fresh as we will be on the day. Because I think the fitness of teams will be a massive just aside in a lot of games. I think we're going to get, we haven't had it yet because everyone's just coming back. But I think as the games go on, we'll start to see more and more shock results. Just because of the sizes of teams, the general fitness of players, I think that'll start taking a toll when the games start piling up.
Are you sure that'll be more of a shock thing, or maybe more going according to the form book, considering the bigger teams do have bigger squads to rotate?
I mean, yeah, it could go that way, but I, as you saw in Germany, there it was a lot of away victories, which is not normal because the lack of fans. It might not even be a squad size thing. It could be that, you know, some of the smaller squads, because they play, that they build up their fitness quicker. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert, but, you know, it could be that, you know, the fitness in the smaller squads builds up, and then they're a lot fresher than the teams who rotate. Because if you've got a player who's got 2 or 3 games, 4 games under his belt, and then you've got another player who's only got one, and he's coming in for his second one, it could be that he's badly off the pace. We don't know. It's a different competition. This is like a Premier League mini tournament after what is effectively, you know, 3 months is longer than the players are usually off. The players, the off season, at least, you know, they come back and they have a pre season. We've come back and started a Premier League mini tournament with relegation on the line and title and, you know, Champions League and what have you. But no pre season. We got about 2 weeks of like light training, social distance, and then went right, you're back in the Premier League now. So I think more injuries will happen and more like quirks of form will come up. So we just don't know.
Obviously, our injury record, even without lockdown, wasn't fantastic. It's we do have to tread pretty carefully when it comes to injuries because we've never had much luck in that department, I don't think. Thankfully, we've come out of the first 2 games unscathed. And the week's rest might just be enough to stop one happening in the Leicester game, or you never know. Injuries permitting, what sort of team could we be looking at, do you think? You mentioned a few of them there. Maybe Sidibe comes back in, Iwobi in that inverted left wing, I don't know.
I mean, if everyone's fit and healthy, then Sidibe for Bernard, put Iwobi on the left, probably the only one, because the back five played so well, I wouldn't change that yet. I mean, he can go onto the bench and wait for his chance because, you know, Michael Keane, don't think Michael Keane would have started alongside Colgate if everyone had been fit, but he was fantastic the first two games.
He hasn't put a foot wrong, has he? So we've got to keep him in.
No, he's good. So, you know, Colgate's turned into the top defender at the club inside this, you know, one season, which is, you know, brilliant. He's a beast at the minute. So obviously he stays there. So, I mean, if Delph's fit, could possibly see him coming in for Davies. I mean, this may be a mistake, but I could even see Sigurdsson starting for Davies, considering Sigurdsson performed a lot better than Davies in the Norwich second half. But I think it, with Leicester's midfielders, that might be a mistake.
Is Andre Gomes' place in the team safe? He's even played well himself against Norwich.
Yeah, I think it is, because Davies was worse. Like, you know, Gomez was awful, but he was better than Davies. So I think, and plus his baseline, you know, is better than Davies. And, you know, he, you know, Gomez doesn't lose the ball quite as often as Davies does. Well,
that's it, yeah.
I think they'd both be in trouble if we had other decent midfielders. But when you're sweating on Fabian Delz to come back to fitness and Gylfi Sigurdsson to come in, I think, you know, you're as safe as you're going to be. I think Gomez,
that's so ominous, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Gomez is one of those players in this team who, if he's fit, he plays. And, you know, that's just a fact. You know, like, it's not good for the competition of the squad, but if he's fit, I couldn't see, you know, Gomez being on the bench fully fit with, you know, Sigurdsson and Davy starting centre midfield. Imagine the meltdown if that came out.
Oh, my God.
No, I think he's on to start. It's just who goes next to him.
I mean, it's going to be food for thought, I think, for transfers this summer, isn't it? We're going to have to bring in a couple of centre mids at this rate, even if it's only on loan, because we can't be going into next season with this kind of debate over who's the worst in the centre midfield.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me, like, the season I got my first season ticket was 2004-05. And that back then, we had a rate, no, not 4-5, the year before, 3-4, when we finished 17th. 2004, and centre midfield was exactly then like it is now. We had about five or six centre midfielders, and they were all terrible, like, apart from Graveson and Carsley, who were good, but they weren't as good as they were going to be the next season when, like, Moyes hit on his formula with Cahill and, you know, the 4-1-4-1. But we had Tobias Linderoff, Alex Nayarko, you know, like, low. We had about five or six.
Oh, we had Lee Tye and...
Yeah, yeah.
And we had
five or six midfielders, centre midfielders, and the centre midfield was the problem every game. Like, there was no combination that seemed to work. And obviously it did work when you put Cahill in the mix with Graveson and Carsley, but that was the season after. So I'm hoping we get a similar thing in the summer, that where you bring in one player, whoever that may be, one key midfielder, and the rest can sort of click around him, because he's the sort of glue that brings it together. So it's not about numbers. We've got three centre midfielders, senior centre midfielders, but it's Sigurdsson, Gomez and Davies. So it's Gomez.
We just need to develop a bit more of a cohesion in the midfield, because that could change everything.
I know. It's just Gabamon, isn't it? It's like, if Gabamon was fit, would we now be looking at him going, I wish we had him all season, he's been playing well? Or would he be like, he's crap, we were all waiting for him, he's terrible? But they're going to need to bring in at least one midfielder in the summer. And if Gabamon's injuries long term again, which it is, maybe get another one on loan.
Definitely. But obviously, looking ahead to the Leicester game, what can we expect from Leicester? I mean, of course, it's hard to judge considering we haven't yet seen them play this game against Chelsea. But we've seen them, obviously, they beat us in November or December, whenever. But, like, since the return, it's been pretty fair to Midland from Leicester's performance-wise, I think.
Yeah, they were the better team against Watford. I saw them play against Watford, and they were the better team. And the only, you know, they concede. Basically, it was a similar thing where, you know, games we've played where they should have won, and then the last second, you know, just went against them, and the opposition snatched the draw out of their hands. I don't know. I'm not sleeping on Leicester. I think they're a very good team. I think Jamie Vardy, I'm really worried about him, as good as our back four has been. I think he might have the beating of Keane and Holgate. Even though Holgate's been playing well, Vardy's a very experienced, very clever, very fast striker. And Holgate and Keane are not fast. Holgate's quick, but you couldn't say he was fast when you see him chasing Willian in that Chelsea game a few months ago. So I'm a bit worried, because, you know, they're a very good team, and the usual, you know, sort of X factor of, you know, being at home, being at Goodison might not be there. So I'm not banking on this one as like we'll win because we're at home. I'm a bit worried that I'd be quite happy with a draw, if I'm honest, because they are a very good team.
I mean, it's also worth noting that I think Vardy's on a bit of a scoring drought, so you know what happens there.
Well, nailed on, isn't it? But you know, we've got quality as well. You know, like they'll be, you know, if the Leicester Blue, the Foxes Blues channel or whatever, like if that exists, they'll be sitting there doing a podcast now, going, yeah, but Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin are good. They might give our centre back some trouble. You know, like we've got, you know, weapons that can do some damage to them as well. So it's going to be, you know, an interesting game because it's all about the up front. I think it's Vardy and Maddison, or Iheanacho, maybe, depends who goes up front with them, versus Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin, who has a better game on the day.
Definitely. I think the only downside for us compared to them is the midfield. They have Tielemans and Ndidi, and we have Davis and a half-fit Andre Gomez.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm a big fan of Tielemans and Ndidi. Still knocks me sick that they got Tielemans. I liked him years ago. Basically, I heard about him because he was mates with Lukaku in the Belgian squad. So I started, like, I did this with Klaassen as well. With different level of success, I suppose. Started watching them before they got him and ended up in the Premier League with the idea that they might have signed for Everton. Obviously, Klaassen didn't work out. Tielemans never did, but he signed for Leicester and he's turned out to be good. So he's one of them, like, players of mine who I just think, oh, if we don't, I was just desperate for us to get him. I think he's a great player. And Ndidi, obviously, wasn't onto him before he went there, but Ndidi's even better than him. Ndidi's a monster. It's like another Idrissa Gueye.
It's like Idrissa Gueye on steroids.
Yeah, pretty much. But they're a very good team, but and the pressure's on them. They can't relax going where safe in our Champions League spots. Man United and Chelsea are both bearing down on them. So there's things to play for, and it'll be a big test. If Everton can win this game or get a result, then they are in the mix for the European places. But if we lose, then even with the games left to go, you'd probably think, you know what, it's more about making sure we finish as high as we can now. We're probably too far away from Europe. It's going to be a big, big indicator of what the rest of the games are going to be like for us this match, I think.
So it's going to be quite a telling game, I think. It's going to be crucial to get a decent result in this game to see, and also a decent performance to maybe see where we can go from there. Obviously, we've got Tottenham, I think, after that. It's just not an easy game. That's at their new grounds. And then we've got a few winnable games, but it decides whether or not we're going to actually have a shot at Europe this season now, I think, isn't it? I mean, it's astonishing, really. We're still in the bottom half. But yeah, we're only...
It's an outside shot at Europe, but because the games are so, you know, compact and tight together, because the table is also very tight, like, you know, there's 4 points between, like, you know, three places sometimes. And like, games have been played now, I won't make anything about points, but we're not that far away from the European places. So a good week, if you win two games and another team, you know, draws and loses or whatever, can suddenly shift because there's not as much time to correct it. So every week's gonna, I think this table's gonna be vastly different to what it may have been if it hadn't, you know, we hadn't have had the lockdown and come back. Because every time there's, you know, a round of games, the table changes. So the only thing you can sort of guarantee is who's in danger of relegation. It's going to be those, you know, five teams at the bottom. And obviously the title's been decided now. Everywhere else is up for grabs. So we know the bottom five, we know the top two. And that's it. Everywhere else is available.
That's it, yeah. I think, so what does that mean? We're going to finish third, does it?
Yeah, probably. I'd say so. But
more likely to be 15.
Would you have said Wolves would be in a shout for third? Because they look like they might be now.
No, yeah, I've been very impressed with Wolves. I mean,
I know,
we've got them coming up as well later on, so I'm not looking forward to that.
Well, this is what I mean. Like, you know, you would never have said that, even though Wolves were playing all right. They got about 14 draws, but it's like, they, you know, it can change that rapidly. You could end up with could end up with Wolves in the Champions League and Sheffield United in the bottom half. It's just so, you know, so volatile, that sort of middle part of the table.
Unfortunately, we're right in the midst of all that as well. So, who knows? Like I said, we could end up in the top four or we'd end up in the bottom six.
Yeah, I mean, be quite nice to... If we don't get in Europe, it'd be quite nice to finish above Arsenal just to watch Arsenal on TV.
Yeah, I mean... I think they'll be more concerned about their Tottenham because Tottenham haven't exactly set the world alight this season, but if they still finish above Arsenal after that, I'm sure they won't be pleased about that.
Oh, probably not.
But, yeah, I think the top half's the least we should be aiming for.
Well, yeah. I when you look at the... You can't make any guarantees about finishing above Spurs. You know, what are they called? Wolves, Spurs, Wolves, all them teams. But you'd like to think we'd finish up with Burnley and Palace, wouldn't you? Like, no disrespect to them, but with all, you know, things being even with our run of games and their size squad, you'd think, you know what, we've done something badly wrong if we finish outside this top 10 when we've had, you know, this many games to get it right.
I know, it is concerning to still be in the bottom half this late into the season. That's not something we've actually seen very often, even under Allardyce, I think we were in the top half at this stage of the season. So,
you know, it's quick to the table, mate. If you can chalk a lot of that up to the previous manager. Since Ancelotti's come in, I'm sure we're third.
We are a third or fourth under Ancelotti. But obviously, when
it's Liverpool, City, Man United, us since Ancelotti came in. So it's easy to think how we bottom halves because you've got used to having Ancelotti now. It wasn't that long ago we had Marco Silva and
we were
playing 15. Awful. Yeah, so same with Tottenham and the same with Arsenal. Is that, you know, you can't really, if you change manager mid season, I think that season's a write off. You just need to do the best you can.
Yeah, well, let's hope it's enough anyway, because, I mean, it's certainly going to be we need to start making some strides forward, and I know the squad's a bit limited, but, you know, we do need to see some evidence of it. And I think we have done, well, certainly before the lockdown, we saw some signs of what could be, and the performances haven't been particularly bad since the restart, I don't think. I mean, I was a bit concerned first half against Norwich, but other than that, I think we've been okay considering the circumstances. But this week's rest could be crucial, couldn't it? I mean, we've got to really make the most of that. Hopefully we'll see the fitness tell in that respect, that we've had that extra break. I think that's going to be the telling factor. If we're going to get a result against Leicester, that's going to be what decides, I think.
Yeah, I do. But we'll see anyway. It's going to be interesting. I'm just glad to be watching footy again. It's great, isn't it? Especially when you're winning matches.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's felt like an age when we won that Norwich game. It's our first win for over 4 months. Painful, innit?
Thank you.
Anyway, will we have a second win in 4 months against Leicester? We'll finish with our predictions. What are you going to say for Everton versus Leicester?
Going to go for 1-1, be quite conservative.
Fair play. I'm going to go 1-0 to Everton. I'm going to be optimistic. But we're not a high scoring side. Defence has been decent, so I'd say if we're going to win, it's going to be by a one goal margin, and it's going to be most likely the lowest one goal margin it can be. So I'm going to go for another 1-0. Right. There you have it, guys. That's our predictions for Everton versus Leicester. I mean, it's going to be an interesting one. We've got more of a rest than they have, but you can never predict anything. I'm going to use that classic lockdown phrase again. And it's an unprecedented time, isn't it?
Mark your bingo cards, anyone who's there.
I know, lockdown bingo, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there you have it, guys. Everton versus Leicester's coming up on Wednesday. Right, so that's the end of the podcast. Of course, there's just the two of us to finish off tonight, so there'll be no quiz, unfortunately, but we've got to pick a song to finish it off. And last week, Teddy picked a song. I can't even remember what he picked. Can you remember what you picked last week, Teddy?
I think it was Give Me All Your Love by ZZ Top, which, you know, Toffee Blues John informed me I had picked before. I'm going to have to branch out away from the rock songs, because I'm not picking obscure album tracks no one knows. I'm picking like bangers that people will know if they like rock, that is. So, and I think I'm consuming all the jukebox efforts. So I'll have to start branching out into different genres.
You're gonna have to broaden your horizons a bit. But thankfully, that's not gonna be till next week, because it's my turn to pick a song at the end of the podcast this week. And you know, we were talking in the Leicester video there, weren't we, about the where can we go under Ancelotti and we need to improve. And fittingly enough, I'll go with the song that I was last listening to on Spotify, which is Yaz and the Plastic Population, The Only Way Is Up. It's pretty fitting, if you'd ask me. So, yeah, there you have it. Well,
feels a good fit.
It's a very optimistic song, which is very rare. You probably don't hear many optimistic songs on Everton podcasts, but there you go. We'll finish with Yaz and The Only Way Is Up. Thank you guys for tuning in on the Toppy Blues. We'll see you next time.